Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita. Jean Marie will not be joining us today.
And I am Ron.
Today we're continuing our Medicine in Transition theme with a topic that is deeply personal, professionally important, and long overdue. This episode is titled The Shift of Dementia Care from Control to Connection. But we're not doing this one alone. We are being joined by a special guest, Jennifer Stoner.
Jenny is a retired associate professor from Aurora University in Aurora, Illinois, where she taught in recreation administration and therapeutic recreation, helping train future professionals to design meaningful, person-centered programs for older adults and people living with disabilities. Also going to add that Jenny was both Lita and my advisor back in graduate school in the 1990s, a while ago.
You had to add that.
God, we're so old.
Jenny has spent much of her career at the intersection of aging, recreational therapy, and program administration, with a special interest in how purposeful leisure and engagement can support quality of life for people living with dementia. And welcome.
Yes, welcome, Jenny.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm glad always to talk about this topic.
Okay, well, through her academic work and consulting, she's been part of a broader movement to move dementia care away from simply controlling behaviors and toward connection, dignity, and participation in long-term care, adult day programs, and community settings. And we are very grateful that she is here with us. She's actually in studio, which doesn't happen often, so we're ready.
So, to set the stage, Jenny, how would you describe the way dementia care has traditionally been approached?
Well, for a long time, dementia care has been built around control, managing behavior, managing schedules, managing the environment, kind of trying to control all the issues that people with dementia have. Fear. People were afraid of people falling. People were afraid of people wandering away. Actually, you know, back in the 1980s, when I first started to be in the healthcare field on and off, we were restraining people. We were tying people to chairs.
Yes.
We were tying people in bed and thought that was caring in a way because we didn't want them to fall or to leave the building. Mm-hmm. And so that sort of approach gradually has become, certainly we don't restrain people anymore, but the whole idea
archaic
of control,
yeah,
right, has been minimized. Looking at a typical day, I think before, and actually it still happens now, is that there are, when people live in a community, I don't like calling them facilities, when they live in a community,
right,
okay, it's hard not to have schedules, okay? It's hard not to be
because
rigid,
right,
okay? Because there's just not, it's not a one-to-one staff to person ratio. And so there are schedules for bath times and meal times and all of that. The problem becomes, I think, when we have sort of a top-down approach, and you can't see me right now, but if you picture staff on top of the resident and kind of like I am the boss, and it doesn't mean that staff are mean. It just means that it's easier to be in control. And it's easier to think about a person who doesn't follow what you're asking them to do as non-compliant or resistant or something, because it makes it difficult for the caregiver, whether it be professional or not.
And so, not just using posies or restraints in the bed, but they also used to restrain the people with dementia by using medications.
Oh, of course, yes.
And that's a whole nother, I mean, I'm very glad that we got away from both of those.
Yeah, and I remember being in adult daycare in the early 80s. And I remember people being on Haldol. That was like one of the major right. ones that people were just like walking in zombies and would end up falling anyway. you
yeah.
know?
So, yeah. I just want to add, because I'm in currently in the healthcare field, a little different than the population that Jenny's talking about. But the staff that work there, they're actually on a schedule too. So you're trying to be understanding of your clients. In our case, we call them students. But they also have a job to do, especially if they have a caseload of four or five yes. students. So you're trying to do that balancing act of having people have their autonomy and all that, but also you staying on track to get your job done.
Yeah, and again, like I'm saying, it's easy to be critical of staff having that, but it is time, what do I want to say, efficient, okay, especially if some staff have called out or you have mm-hmm. a large number of clients or even there's many more documentation demands now for staff, and so they have to have time for that. Mm-hmm. Also, there are agency staff. And again, I'm not being down on agency staff, but agency staff will come in and not know the residents as much, but they're doing the job. And so they have to like do the job. So it's kind of like we usually talk about there are two kinds of their approaches.
Okay.
You have to be concerned about the task, which is the instrumental approach, but then you have to be concerned about the relational approach.
Right.
So it's a balance. It is. It
that's
is really
exactly
is
right. It is a balance.
Right. And it's not like you're saying that safety doesn't matter, because like you said, even back in the day when they were using restraints or chemical restraints, there were still accidents and falls. But with safety,
I think as time has evolved, we're learning more over time.
Well, yeah,
and
I hope.
Well, I mean, again, we're not using the restraints, we're not using the medication as the go-to.
Yeah,
you know, in certain cases, if it's you know,
but I think it's easy to pigeonhole the individuals by saying I'm only concerned about safety, and that's the entire. Person has to be considered, not just their safety.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their emotional needs,
psychological
needs,
right.
not just the physical need of safety. But if safety is not the only priority and living with dementia is seen as individuals with preferences and rights, don't we do things to help them on a day-to-day basis then? Without using restraint?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things is the language. When we talk about wandering problems or exit-seeking behaviors or those kinds of things, I personally don't like the word behavior.
Okay.
And I'm, you know, Illinois Department of Public Health uses that term. Everybody uses that term, but I like to think of them as actions because
okay.
that's what they are.
Okay.
They are actions and oftentimes logical. If I'm frustrated, if I'm trying to tell you something, communicate something to you, and I'm not able to do that and you're not getting it, sometimes I act it out,
mm-hmm.
okay, in my frustration, and that is a logical consequence of being frustrated, or do you know what I'm saying? It's not but we like to label it behavior, and non-compliant, and then we like to chart.
Right, right.
Resident was
non-compliant
or whatever,
yeah.
and then that goes in their record, and then we start looking at them that way.
And then people who have no idea who they are look at that record and are like, oh, this client, this person is a problem because they're non-compliant.
Now, I visited a friend in a facility day before yesterday, and as I was exiting, there was an individual that used a wheelchair for mobility, and he was sitting at the front desk, near the front desk, looking out the front doors. And as I was exiting, he said, wait, could you help me? And I went back and I said, you know what? I've got to go make dinner. but I'll be back tomorrow. Can we talk about it then? But the lady that was actually sitting behind the desk had no interaction at all. So you got that problem. But at that time, and this is something I was wondering if you could use in the future, can't they have a courtyard within the facility? So in other words, new building. It's not that they could do this in every facility, but build a facility that has a center courtyard. And the doorways to the courtyard are open and available to the people that want to go out.
Many places do have that.
Okay.
That is in a design. And even if it's not for every, it's oftentimes if there's a memory care unit, they have a separate patio and an outdoor area where they garden and where they can walk and whatever.
Good.
So that is true.
Good. I didn't see that where I went to visit, but I am glad that they're bringing that in, because then you're giving the individual rights and choices.
Yes.
And
more control.
And more control of themselves. Right.
Which actually, I want to go back to this whole control thing, because what tends to happen, Jenny, from your experience, what do you think tends to happen when the people providing the service are really trying to be in control of the patient or the resident, whatever? I mean, that's a big thing.
Well, I think a lot of times people don't know any better. And I hate to okay?
No, you're absolutely right. I would agree with that.
We do that with everybody.
It's the way it's always been.
Well, and it's in everything. So let me give you an example, which is totally unrelated. When I first started teaching college, my experience with college professors was they lectured. So they were in total control of the content. And so I started doing that. I started doing total lecture and realized how that was not working. The students were bored and asleep. And I said,
I see what you're saying.
You see? But it was my control. I had to give up control and ask questions, not knowing what the answers would be and having to respond, maybe putting myself in a position where I didn't know everything.
A funny side story to that, in one of, not your classes, but at that time, one of the students, one of the grad students, was also a high school teacher who did a lot of speaking in front of the students. And the professor was struggling with lecturing to the group, but there was this power imbalance because the student is like, and he said this, away from everybody else, offered assistance to the professor on how to, and that professor was like, I teach college. I don't need your advice. You're a high school teacher.
Ooh.
It was a control thing.
It was. See, and the same is true. You have to visualize. I hope I'm not getting too far off. But you have to visualize, this is a person who has something to offer. And it is a mutual, if you thought about the staff being on top and the person here, think about it as more of a horizontal approach where you're working together, but it takes more time, more effort. You are not the boss of the person, so you can't use authority. You can't wander. See, we do that a lot. No, sit down. No, we do that calling up our authority, and that doesn't work.
One of the big problems that I see, again, with my students and the staff and all that, and it happens with older adults, is part of it is the cognition. We're saying something like people are understanding exactly what we're saying and comprehending everything, when because of age or disability, they might not have that cognitive ability to get it the way we're saying it. So when we say you need to do this, they're not getting that, or it's coming to them slowly, and they're not processing it as quickly. So the person giving the care is getting frustrated because they want something done, and they want something done now. And the person receiving the care might not be understanding it at that speed.
Right. And they will pick up the urgency of the person wanting it done quickly. And oftentimes that exacerbates the situation too.
Okay. I know that the wandering is a problem because people that are placed into a facility, not their own home, they may be constantly trying to go back home. They know that they're not home. That's all they want to do is go back home. They know they don't belong here. They want to leave. So how do you handle teaching the staff how to deal with that?
Okay, and you know, again, it's individual people, so you can give some general kinds of things, but of course it focuses on the person. But I'm going to bring up somebody's name, and that's Naomi File. And I would encourage anybody listening to this podcast, because this is just a little appetizer, of obviously, about what to do. But looking up Naomi File, which is spelled F-E-I-L, and validation, is somewhere to do some additional learning.
Okay.
But let me go back and give some examples. Okay. Of, so someone wanting to go home, here's often how we approach it. Okay. And that's family members or staff or whomever. We see it as, oh my God, you know, oh, this is awful. You know, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. So sometimes we confront, no, you live here now and you can't go anywhere. Let's see, how does that feel? Okay.
They have right. No control.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and again, I can't say this work, any of these things never work or do work, or I haven't used them. I've used all of them. Okay. Right or wrong. Sometimes it's the person is about ready to crash out the door. You can't sit and think about how they feel. You know, there's, so there's a safety thing, but let's go back to the person who, wants to leave. All right. So there's the confrontation. No, mom, you can't leave. You have to stay here, whatever. Okay. Then there's the lying. Wait here because your son is going to come to visit and you want to be here when he comes. Well, then he doesn't come. So then you got to deal with that because you just lied. Okay. Or we have redirect or distraction. This one isn't necessarily bad, but I'm going to tell you about why it's sometimes not so good. So the person says, I have to leave. I need to go home. My kids are getting out of school or whatever it is. And you go, well, let's go over here then play bingo. Okay. In all of those instances, what is happening? You are shutting the person down.
Mm-hmm.
And the focus is on you. Again, I know caregivers are stressed. I'm not downplaying that. That's a whole nother
mm-hmm.
issue.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of times you have to say, okay, it's not about me. It's about the person. Okay. So I just shut them down. All right. So what Naomi File talks about in validation is you don't play a game. You don't lie. You don't do, you explore. And that's the word she uses. What's going on with the person? Okay. So, for example, I need to go home and, you know, with a home is really important to you, isn't it? Tell me about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Again, does this always work? No. But you see the difference is I am validating
mm-hmm.
your feelings about what's going on
mm-hmm.
and I'm exploring that. And what that does oftentimes is help a person process through the feelings of anxiety. You don't necessarily know all the time what those are, what they're involved with. But you're helping a person explore that and work through that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so much more affirming than trying to do these other manipulative kinds of things.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a good approach. My go-to when I worked as a nurse's aide in a long-term care facility was redirect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like maybe say, can we go over, while we're waiting, can we go over here and fold these napkins? Because we're going to be eating dinner soon
mm-hmm.
and we need to put them on the table. I mean, that would, if that didn't work, I wouldn't know what to do.
Right. And that's, again, not bad. But what I'm saying is if this person is stuck
yeah.
on this emotional thing. And I'll give you another example if I have time to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Okay. And this comes from one of Naomi Files' videos.
Okay.
But a woman is saying, and this is very common, I'm looking for my skirt. Somebody probably stole it here. Well, that's really common.
Yes, yes.
The response is often what? What do you think the response of staff usually is when a person says, somebody stole my skirt?
Nobody stole it.
Nobody stole your skirt. But I'm thinking, I'm missing my skirt.
Right.
Okay. Well, in this short video, the person talking to the woman who said, I can't find my skirt, is that skirt is really important yep. to you, isn't it?
Maybe describe it or?
Yeah. And it's her, the video is done with her daughter. So she says, that's the skirt you wore with Dad a lot.
Okay.
It is, the woman responds. And she said, well, what would you wear with that skirt? I would wear this and I would wear that. Then the woman says, I better find my skirt because my husband will want to see me in it. Well, her husband's no longer living.
Right.
So the woman does not enter into that fantasy. She just says, that skirt has been important to you mm-hmm. for a long time. Validating the fact that she, and probably, if we're going to get real psychological, the skirt symbolizes all the memories of her mm-hmm. husband or whatever, mm-hmm. and now can't find it. So that's what I'm saying. So to say to a woman with that emotional attachment to that object, no, no one stole it. What's wrong with you? Mm-hmm. Let's not talk about it. Let's go eat brownies. What doesn't address what's going on
right.
with her. And so it will keep resurfacing. Sure. Sure. It'll all day long, the person will keep bringing that up.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's the...
Okay. Yeah, excellent way to approach that. What happens if providers really lean hard on control? Let's say that you were called into a facility to help because the staff is constantly trying. They refuse to change. They're just constantly trying to control the individuals. What's your first go to?
Stories usually. Stories make more sense to people. But, you know, it really is a paradox that you have to get people to buy into what you're saying. Because if you say, the more you try to control, the worse it gets, people don't usually believe that.
Okay.
You know, and
do you try to put the person in the position of the client?
Role playing?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of times I will do that without telling them I'm going to do that. You know, like if they'll come in, I'll go, oh, you need to sit here. I get real controlling.
Okay. Okay.
And then I ask people, how did that feel?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, well, I wanted to sit over here. No, I need you to sit over there.
Okay.
You know, and I try to do it not so obvious. But I can see on their faces, they're ticked.
Yeah.
They don't like that.
Right. Okay.
And so then we talk about that's exactly.
Remind me after we're done taping to bring up this example because I have something to share with you.
Okay. All right.
All right.
But it is about control.
Yes. Yes, it is. Right. And again, let's be fair to staff.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what else to do
mm-hmm.
or they have so many people. There's a time crunch. There's safety. They're trying to feed someone well, watch somebody who was trying to get up, multiple things. So, you know, I say to them, don't be hard on yourself when you're not doing the right thing, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
But try. Pick out a resident that you find difficult to work with and is always having these kinds of issues and work on the method with that person. You can't do everything.
Right.
What we call resistance is sometimes a normal reaction to feeling unsafe.
Well, maybe the misinterpretation of what's at the bottom or what's at the root cause of the person exhibiting resistant behavior. Okay.
Okay.
So we mislabel it as they just don't want to do what I've said.
Okay.
Or that they mislabel it as that.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to what's going on with the person.
Okay.
What they may need, and I need to figure that out.
Okay, so it's just another way of looking at what we just said.
I think
okay.
so.
Yeah, sometimes I repeat myself.
Well, I do that all the time.
So the alternative, what is connection-based care? And I think you're going to talk for a while on this.
I talk for a while on a lot of things. Well, it is, you know, the jargon nowadays for a while has been person-centered care. So if you visualize a circle with another circle in the middle, the person's in the middle. Mm-hmm. And so everything else like physical therapy and decisions about care and all that, we must focus the person, the locus of control, if at all possible, be with the person in the center. Now, people will say, oh, my God, my mom can't make decisions. She's this and that. But what can, you know, therapeutic recreation has long been a champion of ability-based care. And that's mm-hmm. not just physical ability. It is decision-making ability and everything else.
Well, that's where the control is.
Yeah, we're back to that word. Mm-hmm. So connection is about relationship as opposed to management. I think that's, you know, kind of sums it up right there. Now, in long-term care, everybody who goes into long-term care, and I know we're talking about staff, but this also relates to family members who are working with a family member. But in long-term care, anybody who enters a long-term care community, there's a form called the MDS that staff fill out. And part of that, from the activity viewpoint, is preferences. And so it's like, do you prefer getting up early in the morning? Mm-hmm. Do you prefer making decisions about your clothing? Do you prefer getting the newspaper? Do you prefer listening to music? How important is it? And it's on a scale of one being very important to five not important at all. So we get a snapshot of what's really important to you as opposed to, you know.
So you're building the structure around the person, not the person fitting into the structure.
Yeah, yes, that's the ideal. But of course, we're institutional.
Right.
Or even if the person is living at home with you, you have a family structure.
Right.
So it's like, well, Mom, I'd love to help you with the bath at 9 a.m., but I go to work. You know, there are some restraints, you know, so constraints.
Can you give some examples on how connection based care moves away from what we were just talking about? One size fits all, you have to fit into what we do for the connection base.
Okay, so I encourage, well, number one, it's based on relationship. And so how do you form a relationship with anybody? How do you form a relationship with good friends? How do you form a relationship?
You have to learn about them.
You have to learn about them. You have to respect their differences from you. I mean, how, you know, you have to come up with a way that you communicate. I have to understand if you have, a good friend of mine has hearing difficulty. And I deal with this in church or whatever. It's like, if I can't hear, I don't want the response to be move up front. Now, I have some responsibility for how I manage myself, but also what are you going to do to help me? You know, and so it's a mutual. Mm-hmm. I think connection is relationship, and it's mutual respect and mutual understanding. And so, for example, if I'm a caregiver also, I don't know if this is veering off, but if I'm a caregiver, professional or at home, and I'm having a rough time, I can say to the person, I'm having a hard time understanding.
Okay.
And
so just being honest and open.
Yes, because sometimes that really helps the relationship.
So we use the word a lot that we try to push is advocating yourself. Because if you don't speak up, people aren't going to know or they're going to assume. So if you do use your voice and advocate for yourself, not that you're always going to get what you want, but at least you are showing, expressing what your needs are or desires are or what you want done.
Exactly. And so everybody advocates, but of course there's the person who no longer can. So if a person with dementia cannot advocate for themselves, if they're acting it out, you know, sometimes working it out with advocating for them, not taking the control, but saying, "Mom, I'm going to talk to them about this, or I'm going to let's try something else, you know, that may work." So it's a fine line, and here's the thing: is you're going to get it wrong, you know. So you just keep working and seeing what works today, maybe not works tomorrow, but you know, always putting the person first. I think that's
now. I know
vital.
This is kind of odd to throw in here, but you were talking about agency help. Was mm-hmm. that like temporary help, or what does that mean?
Well, it's. There are agencies who will help fill. So, for example, if I don't have enough nurses' aid, there's a certain number that I have to have. Agencies will come for until I can hire mm-hmm. more. They
okay.
will come.
Okay.
And I'm not saying they're bad, but it's very difficult to come in as a person and not know people.
Right. That's you know? That's what because we were just talking about that. Like, if as a person who works here. Day in, day or whatever, whichever shift they're working, they are dealing with the same people over and over, right? They don't switch people up in a facility, right? You're assigned a block of people
for the day.
Shift. Oh, so it does shift?
Well,
it can.
Yeah. And okay, so
and
here's
you have floaters too.
Well, yeah, well, and so then you have and people need days off. So sure. If I work the dementia unit or if I work memory care, whatever, Monday through Friday, somebody else is going to be there Saturday and Sunday. Or if I'm on vacation or if I'm. So, yeah, we most places, I would say, strive for continuity of staff.
OK.
It's not always possible.
OK. Always that possible. Has to be a very difficult thing. You know, like. I have a military background, and in the military, instead of saying I'm a receptionist, I have a number. Okay, instead of saying I'm a truck driver, I have a number. So my number as a mechanic is 63 Hotel. Every 63 Hotel in the Army knows how to fix. Those particular trucks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yes, you can easily, this person's dead, okay, get another 63 Hotel. You're not going to put an 88 mic in there because a truck driver doesn't know how to do anything other than turn the key and go. So how do civilian dealing with individual personalities handle that smoothly? This person couldn't make it. We're going to stick somebody else in. Is there like a chart at the nurse's station that lists the quirks and qualms and likes and dislikes of each patient?
No, you know, it's a very difficult thing. And I guess what I would like to say is people in long-term care, most direct care staff try their best. And so I have to say that it's almost like this daunting situation that's doomed to fail in a way because you try to be person-centered, but everything works against that. But you try anyway, you know, and so you do what you can. And that's the way it is in education or any other field that you work with people, you know. So I try not to be critical of staff because I know their job is really hard. When I try to train, I try to say, okay, here, try to remember these things, you know.
That are universal amongst dealing with any people.
Yes.
Okay,
and
okay.
try to, try to put the person first. I read a book, Dr. Murthy, who used to be Surgeon General, okay. He wrote this book called Together, and he was talking about his parents being doctors and he tells the story of one doctor who used to knock on a person's door, but before they knocked, they said, "I am thankful that I have the privilege of being part of this person's care." And I think if you enter, okay, I'm an idealist, what can I say? But before you enter a room, before you take on people, you say, I am thankful to do this, because that puts you in the humble position rather than the controlling position. Right. So I think it's a lot of it's attitude and some of it's training and education. But it's also the system, like any other system, works against what you're trying to do.
No, I mean, the work that you do, Jenny, I mean, it's extremely admirable because, and again, we were talking about this before, and we've had multiple conversations about this, and Lita, you and I have too. It's about education. Now, if you're educating somebody, if you're in-servicing them, you're telling them what to look for and different things to do to be effective, yet that person in the training could care less, you'll never get through to them, and that's on them. But as a professional, if you're, you know, giving the training, then you are giving them the tools to use to be better caregivers for the people that they're serving.
Yeah. I usually start out and say, some of you will really care about this, and some of you will not care. And I hope I can convince you to care, but, you know, perhaps this field is not for you.
Yes. No, it's
because
it's
you
true.
Have to have a heart for it.
And I mean, being realistic, yeah, I mean, you're not, people need to work, so
right,
sometimes
to
people
make
take
money.
Jobs.
Of course, right, yes.
But that might not necessarily be the best field for them because it is more of a caring, compassionate field than to get rich at.
Right. And when you deal with people, there's no one kind of answer.
Exactly.
So yesterday I dealt with Barbara and she was calm. And, you know, so now today I come expecting that, but Barbara's off the wall and she's doing all these things. And I'm going, you know, what is this? Mm-hmm. But that's people. That's raising children. That's anything that, you know, you deal with people.
Well, I hope that family members in particular listen to this and get some ideas on how difficult it is to work in facilities and provide the best possible care for their loved ones. I mean, it's a rough job. I think I'd rather be a tank mechanic.
Well, that is more, what do I want to say? Not concrete. You know, it's kind of like this stepwise, I think, maybe.
Right.
But it's funny you use that word because it's a very accurate. If you are concrete and you are not willing to budge at all, you'll never be effective at what you do because then you're looking at being authoritarian.
Yes.
And that doesn't work. There is this, you know, you've got to humble yourself. You have to humble yourself. And I mean, you still have a job to do, don't get me wrong, but it's not my way or the highway. It's this way or no way, because that shoe doesn't fit everybody.
Right. And again, being willing to learn, my sister had dementia. And so when I first went to visit her, the physical therapist was saying, you know, your sister just will not take part in physical therapy. Well, what have you done? You know, you come in and say, now it's time for physical therapy, right? Okay, she doesn't want to do that. So I have, in the past, had spoken to them about using music, okay? And this was many years ago. So I said, get some music on your phone, like the Temptations or whatever, okay? Mm-hmm. And so I went with them one day and I said, get this on your phone. And my sister Rosemary sat on the exercise bike and she didn't want to do anything, but the music came on. She was in another sphere.
Mm-hmm.
And she sat on that exercise bike for half an hour. And I said, you know, if you would just think about what is important to her and respect that.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
It's not that she won't, you know.
Yeah, I'm chuckling because that's the greatest thing about being a rec therapist. Because you can get people to do things, for example, that would be considered physical therapy, but they're having fun doing it.
Yeah, and it was meaningful. Nice. You couldn't use something else with her. That's the other thing, going back to using, I do a lot, not a lot, but I do some talking to families about how to stay connected, talking about connection.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking necessarily about care, although some of that is true, but we're talking about how to still have a connection with mom when she isn't much mom anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so it's through the activity, through the doing something meaningful with each other, that solidifies that connection, that allows you to have some kind of relationship with your mom.
Mm-hmm. Shifting gear just a little bit, but not too much. When you're trying to focus on the skills and the abilities that a person still has,
mm-hmm.
How important is that when you're trying to integrate different therapies or working with the people? You know, like, how important is it to concentrate on the plus side of people rather than trying to force something on them, I guess?
Well, you know, think about your own self. When you're confronted with something you can't do or you can't do anymore, you know, what, you just want to throw it. You just want to not do it.
Every day. Every day. Yes.
Right.
Yes, I agree.
But it's often, I remember at the adult daycare, here's my stories. I best do stories.
Yeah, yeah.
People connect with stories.
I think so. But anyway, I had this woman, she's no longer with us. Her name was Sophie. And she had eyesight issues and some memory issues and whatever, but she loved to sew. So I started out by giving her two pieces of material and pinned it together and gave her the needle. Well, she was all over the place and she threw it and said, you know, I don't want to do this, and I don't like it, and whatever. I said, okay. And I had not studied rec therapy. I just said, oh, can I do? Okay. So I took a marker, a black marker, and I drew a line, okay, and came back to her and said, I'm so sorry. There's a good line. I'm so sorry that I gave you the wrong materials.
Okay.
Here is something, would you sew on this? Well, she was able to sew it perfectly. You know, I didn't say, well, since you can't do this anymore.
Right.
I came back again, humbled myself and said, because it was my mistake, I did not know her well enough or think about what she could or couldn't do. But so now she was able to do it and felt good, because people lose, that's another whole topic, they lose their, what we call loss of roles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. So she saw herself as a seamstress, as a sewer. And so she felt like she could not do that. But when I was able to adapt the material and she could sew, she felt so good.
Empowered.
Yes, she did. And felt like she was herself. We lose ourselves when we lose our roles.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I was saying to you, what am I going to do when I don't teach anymore? I don't know. I feel like I'm going to be teaching until I die, because that's so much of who I am, you know? And if I lose that, I don't know. I might throw tantrums. I mean, I might get real resistant.
And like you were saying, adding just a line for her to focus on, it kind of brought back another training episode that I had during undergrad work with Penny Devon. I don't know if you remember.
Yes.
Her. But she had us wear glasses that were completely smeared, so it was hard to see, put headphones on so we could hardly hear, and wrapped our legs tight so that we could hardly walk. We had a shuffle, and said, okay, now I want you guys to go out and I want you to do things that you normally do.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to go out in the community center of the school and try to work a vending machine. What vending machine? Where's the vending machine? Just to get an idea of how much of a struggle it is for people that are losing bits and pieces of their physical being, and they can't do these things. And then what would you do to change that? Obviously, you can't give somebody their eyesight back, but you could do things that are tactile, and you could say, well, can you feel this, you know? Mm-hmm. Let's see if we could do something by feel rather than by sight. But those things all take time and energy. And like you're saying, that I think maybe the solution is to, number one, pay people a better,
That's a whole different podcast.
I know, but pay people a proper amount of money for what they're doing. And that will, in turn, draw more people into the business and have more nurses' aides and more nurses and more rec therapists and more of everybody, because we're going to be overrun with old farts like us very soon.
So, yeah, I had read where the baby boomers are like the largest
population.
Right, like, and 10, 20 years from now, people are going to be expected to live into their 80s and 90s.
So we need to do this now. Yeah. We need to reach out to the colleges and the universities and the high schools, start there, and to get the, I don't know how you get the income higher, but you got to do it, because people aren't going to be able to take care of mom and pop for $8 an hour.
Wow. That's going to be something to deal with Congress, because a lot of that has to deal with health care and a lot of that has to do with insurance. And that's again, that would be a completely different.
Well, and it's kind of like, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Because it's like, do you work on legislation and then work on people's attitudes? Well, if you do that, like DEI, it often fails because people are not committed to, their attitudes aren't there to make it happen. So it's the same. It's the same kind of struggle. So it's kind of like we do what we can. This little people who are listening to this, people that I teach, somebody, I always believe that there's somebody in the group, whatever group I am, that will learn something that will make a difference.
Right.
That,
and take so I that have ball my, and run with it.
Yeah. And so I have to believe that. I have to not have grandiose expectations, but believe that somebody will change something.
Well, I hope this episode helped some people, and I really appreciate you coming to join us today and express your professional.
I hope we covered. I tend to veer off.
But we're going to continue this in the future, if you don't mind.
No, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
You didn't ask her, you just kind of told her.
I did, yes.
Control.
Because I have, yeah.
you wouldn't mind doing this,
hey,
would you?
Either that or I'll just pretend that I'm you and I'll be a surrogate Jenny.
But no, this is phenomenal, and I think we could actually get a part two and possibly even a part three out of this, because there is just so much here. And again, that's where Lita and my our background is, but Jenny was...
She's a step over.
Oh,
She's a cut above.
Yes, yes.
But she's had, what, 30 years? 40?
At least.
Yeah. I mean... And again, this is not an exact science. Nothing is. But I think what we're talking about in the stuff that Jenny is emphasizing is on different ways to work with people, putting them first.
Yeah, and there's a lot to learn. I think that, you know, one of your comments, the ongoing, if I really want to help my mom, or I'm going to go online, I'm going to watch some things. I'm going to listen. I'm going to talk to people. I'm very interesting. When I was doing one of my, are we wrapping up? Can I keep going?
Go ahead.
One of my educational things for families and talked about using things that people enjoyed to make a connection. Like I was talking afterwards, a social work, master's level social worker came up to me and said, I never thought of using activities with my father. Mm. It's like,
the light bulb went on.
Yes. It's like, oh, we could play cards. Maybe not the same game, but we could, you know, it wasn't in her wheelhouse.
Right.
You know,
I
think it's helping people understand.
What you said, you don't know what you don't know.
Yes.
Again, I think we could have more episodes on this, but we want to thank you, Jenny, for coming in and bringing your expertise and your passion to this conversation.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And as always, this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it. because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.